Thank you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football, men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our 11th edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. Well, I will admit I was wrong last Saturday, and I will give credit where credit's due. I did not think Iowa would be able to beat Michigan, and sure enough, the Hawkeyes were able to win the game last Saturday over a Michigan team that was ranked 13th in the country coming in. The final was 24-16. And really, it was a game that Iowa pretty much was in control of most of the way. You know, the Hawkeyes, actually Michigan started the game with the ball, and the defense for Iowa forced a three and out. Hawkeyes' first possession, they went right down the field. Marcus Coker got a touchdown, 7-0. And his first of two touchdowns he had on the afternoon. He also went over 100 yards rushing for the fourth straight game, and he's now actually not only over 1,000 yards rushing for the season, but he's currently the Big Ten's leading rusher, which is pretty remarkable considering the start that he had to this season. He has really come on here the last month for Kirk Ferentz and his team. But to me, the story of this game last Saturday was the play of the Iowa defense. Guys like Broderick Benz, Tyler Nielsen, Jordan Bernstein, they all have phenomenal games. And really, that entire defense, they played at the lead pretty much the entire way and never gave it up, made plays when they needed to. Two huge turnovers in the second quarter. You had the fumble recovery by Tyler Nielsen, set up a field goal by Mike Meyer of 42 yards and went against the wind. And Michigan gets the ball. There's a rather questionable squib kick that was executed. Or I guess I don't know if executed is really the right word, but that's what Iowa attempted to do as a squib kick. Michigan ended up with really good field position and went right down the field right before half. Then Denard threw an interception that was tipped and then caught by Christian Kirksey right near the goal line. Actually, it might have even been in the end zone. I can't specifically recall, but it was right down near there. And instead of Michigan coming away with points, Iowa was able to hold an 11-point lead going into halftime. Michigan got a field goal in the third quarter, but then in the fourth, Iowa got that second touchdown from Coker, made it 24-9. Michigan came right back, scored, made it 24-16. Then the final drive was really really interesting to see that unfold. You have the very it was the final drive. Michigan had the ball with 2:18 left. And Vincent Smith picks up 11 yards and gets a first down on a play. Initially, though, he was not ruled down. The replay clearly showed his elbow was down, so the referees ended up getting the call right. But initially, they said he wasn't down, and he ended up running all the way in the end zone for a touchdown. That, had it stood, it would have made it a two-point game. A two-point conversion would have tied it. Instead, the ball got placed back over at Michigan's 29-yard line. They kept moving the ball down the field, got near the goal line again. There was a very, I don't want to say controversial play, quite honestly, because that was another call the refs ended up getting correctly if you see the replay. It was second and goal play. Denard Robinson threw a pass into the end zone towards Junior Hemingway. Hemingway made a heck of an effort on the ball, managed to keep one foot in college. You only need to have one foot in. Managed to keep it was a play that had he held on to it, it would have been a touchdown, but you see the replay, and the ball is clearly not in his possession. You see it hit the ground, and he doesn't have complete control. So that was another call the refs ended up getting right. And, you know, the officiating, for the most part, was pretty solid last Saturday. Iowa ended up getting a win when they stopped them on fourth and goal on the very final play. B.J. Lowry broke a pass up that was intended for Roy Rountree. And the Hawkeyes now sit at 6-3, making them bowl eligible for the 11th straight year. And now they play a Michigan State team that's also going to be coming in ranked 13th this Saturday. And the division's at stake. If Iowa wins Saturday morning, it's an 11 a.m. kickoff. If Iowa wins on Saturday, the Hawkeyes will be in a tie for first place, but they would have the inside track to Indianapolis. All they would have to do is win those remaining two games at Purdue and Nebraska, and they would be the ones representing the Legends Division in the Big Ten Championship game 3 weeks from now in Indianapolis. So a lot at stake for Iowa in that regard. And then to also throw in there the fact that it's Senior Day, and you're going to have players like the ones I mentioned earlier, Benz, Nielsen, Bernstein, Mike Daniels, Sean Prater, Marvin McNutt, Brad Herman, Adam Geddes, Marcus Zusevics. These guys are going to be playing their final game at Kinnick Stadium on Saturday. And I guess I'll throw Thomas Nardo in there as well. He came back from an injury last week. And LeBron Daniel. You're going to have four starters on the defensive line Saturday. LeBron Daniel's starting in place of Dominic Alves, who tore his ACL in the fourth quarter of last Saturday's game against Michigan. Ferentz said it right after the game that it was a torn ACL. He'd be done for the year. Alves had surgery this week. It sounds like it went well. And he'll be back next season for Iowa. But again, now you look at Saturday's game, Legends Division at stake. And who knows? If Nebraska and Michigan both lose Saturday, an Iowa win could really set it up where they could potentially have a shot at winning it next week at Purdue. We'll have to wait and see how that all unfolds. But big game, and it's becoming it. I don't want to say it's a rivalry necessarily, but seeing how Iowa and Michigan State are in the same division and just seeing how these games have gone the last few years, even last year's game that Iowa won by 31 points, very physical when these two teams play each other. And it's one of those games that whoever, regardless of who wins and loses, players are going to be banged up. They're going to need to be finding a cold tub. As soon as they're able to go to one, they're going to want to deal with all the aches and pains. It's going to be that kind of game on Saturday. Got a pretty strong podcast for you here this week. Jordan Gerritsen, my former colleague at the Daily Iowan, will be joining us here in the next segment. And later, I'll be joined by Chris Rowell, former Iowa defensive back. He joins us every week. We'll be discussing the Hawkeyes as well as this week's Pick'em games. And a reminder, if you want to participate in this week's HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em, you still have until Friday at 5 p.m. Central to do so. You go to the homepage, you'll see 24 Heisman Road. Hover over that, click on the Pick'em page. List of 10 games is there. And just mail your picks, HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score with your Iowa-Michigan State prediction. We'll use that in the event of any tiebreakers that may exist at weekend's end, like we did last week. I want to congratulate Larry McGranahan of Iowa City. Second time that he's won a pick 'em this season. Finished 8-2, won a tiebreaker with his Iowa-Michigan score. He actually had the Hawkeyes winning, and that ended up being the difference. The person he was tied with had Michigan. So, Larry, congratulations if you're listening. Originally, one of the games I had listed on this week's Pick'em and planned to discuss with Chris was Nebraska-Penn State. However, in light of what has taken place in State College over the past several days, I have since removed that game from this week's Pick'em. The decision was made out of respect to the victims identified in the grand jury report and their family members, and all thoughts should be with them first and foremost at this time. When we come back, Jordan Gerritsen will join me, and later, Chris Rowell, so don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. Pleased to be joined this week by someone that I call a former colleague. He's the pregame editor at the Daily Iowa, Jordan Gerritsen. Jordan, thanks for coming on. How you doing, man?
It's good to be here. I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
I guess I'll just start off here by getting your thoughts on last Saturday's game that Iowa was able to win against Michigan, a game that a lot of people, including myself, didn't necessarily think they would perform well in, considering what happened the week before against Minnesota. What did you see on Saturday? What did you ultimately take away from that game that I guess, leads you to think that maybe things have just become different.
Yeah, you said it. I mean, coming into that game, that seemed like a matchup that didn't bode too well for Iowa. I mean, you had Iowa's struggling defense that seemingly couldn't stop people when it counted, and then Michigan's high-powered offense coming in. But that's what the game came down to. I mean, four plays from, what, the three-yard line of Iowa, and they stopped them. They brought the blitzes, got a little bit more aggressive, played a little bit more man. So I think it was just – it was a big game for the Iowa defense going forward. I think we have to see now, you know, how much of that was them maybe overperforming last week. Is that a real progression that they made? I think they've certainly made a jump. Maybe this week against Michigan State we find out how big that jump really was.
And along those lines, too, just the fact that they were also able to create turnovers. They got big games, especially on the defensive side of the ball, which I don't want to necessarily say it was a surprise, but I thought that was really the story of the game.
Yeah, no, that was one of the things I was thinking about going into the game, actually. This was really, for Iowa, this has been a year where they'd not really come up with a lot of turnovers, and that's kind of been a big thing, particularly interceptions the last few years for Iowa, and I think that was part of the reason for their defensive struggles, really not being able to get off the field, not coming up with those big plays to put the ball back in the offense's hand. But you said Nielsen came up with that big sack and forced fumble and recovery, and then Kirksey had that pick, and those were both huge. I mean, Nielsen's fumble recovery led to a field goal, and then Kirksey's pick probably took points off the board probably. So I think moving forward, they're going to need to continue to force turnovers, because that was a big boost, and that prevented them from scoring more points.
One of the emerging storylines here, at least the last few weeks, has been the play of Marcus Coker. He really struggled early on in the year. He had the two fumbles, the opener against Tennessee Tech, but the last four games, he's had two touchdowns, and each game has gone over 100 yards. He's gone over the 1,000-yard plateau, first running back here to do that since Sean Green in 2008. Just how would you describe the development and the strides that he's made over the past few weeks?
I think he's really kind of, I don't want to say discovered his identity, but maybe reconfirmed his identity with himself, who he is as a runner. He's not a guy who's going to make people miss and dance in the backfield. I mean, he's a guy who's going to find his hole, run straight ahead, be deliberate about it, and he's done that well finally over the last 2 weeks. I think you kind of touched on it at the beginning of the year. He looked a little tentative. He had those two fumbles on his first four carries of the year. I think people overreacted a little bit, maybe just because of the performance he had in the Insight Bowl last year was obviously tremendous. I think the hype was a little excessive coming in, but he's shown that he's a good back. I think he understands who he is as a running back, and I think that's just kind of clicked for him again, and he's back to the guy he was at the end of last season.
And I found it interesting, I guess Mark D'Antonio during his press conference with Michigan State Media made the comparison of Marcus Coker to that of Jerome Bettis, and just his style of play and how he runs over people.
Yeah, he's a bus, he's a truck, he's some sort of large vehicle that is running people over, and you definitely don't want to be his way. I mean, it seems like at least once a game he has a head-on collision, and he always gets the better of it. So
now transitioning into this game that Iowa has against Michigan State, the fact that both teams, I mean, this is, it's not necessarily the winners going to the Big Ten Championship, but the winner of this game has complete control of its destiny. Just what does it say about this team now that after a game like it had last week against Michigan, they're going into this game against Michigan State where really it's almost winner take all?
It has that feel, and it's kind of like a whole new world for Iowa. I mean, you know, what, a week ago or whatever, they're
was falling.
Yeah, exactly. They lose to Minnesota, you know, seemingly one of the worst teams in a BCS conference, and now they come back with a win against a top 15 team, and they're right back in the thick of it, and they've played well. You got to like their chances going in. They played well against Michigan State in recent years, and it's kind of it's interesting because it's kind of a flip of the matchup last week where the focus was on the Michigan offense versus the Iowa defense, and now, you know, it seems like that Iowa offense going against that really tough Michigan State defense is what everybody has their eyes on.
Yeah, I don't know how much of Michigan State you've been able to see this year, but I just wanted to ask what kind of stands out to you about them this season, and how much of a role do you think maybe the motivation is going to play for them, especially after last season's game at Kinnick Stadium where Iowa really just spanked them?
Well, I think first off on offense, you have that quarterback in Kirk Cousins who's been through the battles. Mm-hmm. He's battle-tested. He's a great leader. So I think their offense is in good hands. But certainly only they're not really winning games with their offense this year, their defense, I mean, the most extended time I got to see them this year was against Michigan, actually, and just really stifled Denard, stifled everyone, just flew to the ball, tackled well. They didn't miss hardly any tackles. Just every single yard seemed like it had to be earned, well earned, and I think I was probably going to be looking forward to, you know, a similar scenario this week.
Do you see this game kind of becoming more of a rivalry now because of the fact that they are in the same division, and just given not necessarily the magnitude of the last few games, but just how it's gone and how physical it's been by both teams on both sides of the ball?
Yeah, I think they're starting to get a little bad blood between these two teams. I know you go back 2 years ago, you have people seemingly getting injured left and right for both teams, people getting concussed. And then, you know, you have McNutt, the last second play, that stings. And then you have the other way to sting about just as much last year with the blowout. And then you come to this year where D'Antonio actually cut off all player interviews this week. I think that, I don't know, I think that says maybe something about how he kind of views this game. I think his players view the game the same way after the butt kicking that they took last year. They want to do the same thing to Iowa this year. So they're going to come in ready to go with taking care of business on their mind.
I'll get you out of here on this, Jordan. I know obviously you have in your pregame you do your predictions, so I won't ask you for a score, but just how do you feel this game is going to unfold? What do you feel Iowa's going to have to do in order to keep those winning ways from last week, you know, be able to carry them over against a team like the Spartans?
I really do think turnovers are going to be a key again. I think Iowa needs to force some turnovers because points, Iowa's offense is very capable. Well, it's one of the best offenses they've had in a while, but they're going to need to get points in another way. Not, I think they'll get, you know, they'll get some against that Michigan State defense, but I think they're going to need to create at least a couple turnovers by Michigan State to be able to produce enough points to top them, because that defense is tough and is as good as anybody they'll face this year. But I have a strange feeling right now. The way I was played at Kinnick Stadium, I don't know what it is, call it magic, whatever. I have a strange feeling that I was going to be able to get enough to pull it out.
It's Jordan Gerritsen from Daily Iowa, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. Pleased to be joined once again this week by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. And Chris, you were right. I got to give Iowa credit. I did not think that they would be able to really keep Michigan's offense in check, but they did just that, and were not only able to get a win on Saturday, but now they're bowl eligible, and they're in a position where they control their destiny towards playing for a Big Ten championship in December. Just what are your initial thoughts on what you saw last Saturday?
My initial thoughts last week, what I saw on Saturday, is just like the past, Coach Parker finds some kind of way to get to take care of quarterbacks like Denard Robertson or whatnot throughout the season. You know, it's not one of those deals where you sit here and be like, oh, I can't wait till this guy comes up. But it just depends on your guys and playing assignment football, just like the triple option. But the guys played well. Congratulations to them, the fans, and, you know, the university also. It was a big win, and now we have to turn our focus on to Michigan State this week.
I forgot to mention this, but you saw the Veterans Day tribute. They had the Tiger Hawk and the red, white, and blue. And then the other side was just black. What was your initial thoughts when you first heard that or saw it?
My initial thoughts was, let me text Pat Anger real quick. And I asked him, I say, Pat, what you think about it? He said, man, that's crap, man. I wish they had did this when I was playing it. But I thought it was really nice. And now I see throughout this week and the past couple of days, a lot of teams are starting to do things like Texas Tech and Rutgers so far. But it's always nice of sitting there and honoring veterans and things like that, breast cancer nowadays. But it's a lot of awareness with a lot of things going on nowadays.
One thing that, again, it's kind of almost reiterating a point, but that really stood out to me with last Saturday's performance is the fact that Denard, they really, for the most part, kept him in check. And it wasn't just, you know, the fact that they were able to keep him in check, but also you saw some individuals that had outstanding games at all three levels. You had Broderick Benz, you know, batting down three passes in the game. You had Tyler Nielsen finishing with 13 tackles, had the sack and fumble recovery in the second quarter. Ended up being a huge turnover. Jordan Bernstein had 15 tackles. Just your overall assessment of the defense and just what you feel they were able to do that allowed them to have that kind of performance, especially considering that they really up to that point hadn't shown that they could make that step.
I was going to say the first thing is focus. And you know, when you got a team that's focused, man, they can do anything, you know. And also I'll just say the guys buckle down and say, hey, this is a big game. And, you know, we still have a Big Ten championship on the line. And I'm sure Coach Ferentz told the guys that, you know, as long as you win the next couple games, but starting with Michigan first, we should be in great shape to get to Indiana, I mean, Indianapolis. But I'm really happy upon the individual and collective as a defense. But what stood out to me is, like you said, Broderick Benz. You know, he batted down three passes or whatnot. That was a good glimpse of Broderick a couple years ago when he was starting and he was a younger guy getting in the mix with Matt Kroll and Mitch King and Adrian and Ballard, you know. But it's been hard, you know, when you don't have those guys on the defensive line with you and you're sitting here, it's like, gosh, it's completely different. Yes, he's the leader of the defensive line, and, you know, with Alvis out for the season, now he has to really step it up, and guys like LeBron Daniel and Mike Daniels got to sit here and step up their energy because you got guys on the defensive line that's not there, and you need your best players to step it up. Also, I just figured that the defensive backs played pretty solid. The calls, the last four downs could have went either way, whatever. It's not a big deal. At the end of the day, a win is a win, and I take it.
And I got to actually ask you about that final drive since you brought it up. The two plays that really kind of stand out, one is that run by Vincent Smith. His elbow, initially they didn't say it was down, and the ref never blew the whistle. He got back up, ran down the sidelines, had a touchdown run, and then they looked at the review and saw that his elbow was down. The other play was the second and goal where Junior Hemingway, the ball's getting thrown to him. It looks like he makes a phenomenal catch. He's able to keep a foot in the end zone, but you see the ball at the very last second come out. And in my opinion, both the referees got both calls correct. But just as you see that final drive unfolding, are you almost thinking at that point it's deja vu, kind of what happened with Minnesota the week before, just how that game ended up? Or is it one of those things you're like, okay, at some point they're going to get a stop, it's just a matter of when?
Well, when I seen the guy, the running back who went down and he kept running because of awareness, I think that's great awareness, you know. When you got guys aware like that, that's great. You know, on the defensive side, we think we got him no matter what. But at the same time, as a defensive coach, they say, hey, you make sure this guy is down even if he gets up. And, you know, it's sometimes where you sit here and be like, oh, that's roughness on the defense or whatnot. No, the guys still think he's up. Then you got Junior Hemingway. That was a play where Junior should have kept the ball in his hands no matter what. And the referee got that right. And some people sit here and be like, oh, okay. But then at the same time, Iowa outplayed Michigan throughout the whole game, and you can't sit here and look up to a final drive all the time. It's just not going to work all the time, as you see what happened at the end of the game. But I thought the Hawks, we did really, really well this week with maintaining Denard Robinson. Denard Robinson still made plays, you know. They were still in the game throughout the game. I thought Iowa could have pretty much dumped Michigan throat down. Michigan played really tough. It was just one of those deals where I still thought we could have took command of this game and just said, hey, this game is over with. But I was also saying with the last drive, you know, Michigan still had to go for two. And I was like, it's kind of hard to make a two-point play after you didn't got close to the end zone, and that two-point play probably is one of the plays you actually did. So, well, like I said, take your hats off to both teams, and we're getting ready for Michigan State.
One player, and I know it seems like we've been talking about him a lot these last few weeks, but rightfully so, is Marcus Coker. Once again, he went over 100 yards. He had two touchdowns. He's now over 1,000 yards rushing for the season. He leads the Big Ten in rushing. Just what have you noticed with him over the course of this past month that's allowed him to not only get back on track from where he was at the start of the season, but be able to keep this going and remain consistent with these types of performances?
I think just giving him the ball. That was one thing I realized. With Sean Green, when he played here, the more carries you got, the more comfortable you got back there and the more yardage you will get, because you're pretty much beating down a defense with the carries of a running back, regardless if you had a backup to help them out or either you were just doing it solo. So I think Marcus Coker got very confident. It's like, okay, 5 yards, 10 yards, 2 yards, 3 yards, and, just keep falling forward. And that's one thing that I realized Marcus Coker is doing nowadays is still falling forward. It's sometimes where he's just not going to fall down at all when he have a whole pile on him. But Marcus Coker had a good season, and like I tell you all the time, as long as Marcus Coker is in the game and he's focused, it's kind of hard to stop those guys, because those offensive linemen want to block for these guys, block for the guys in the back, especially Marcus Coker, because he makes them feel good.
Now, I guess kind of segueing here to this Saturday's game, first of all, it's Iowa Senior Day, and you're going to have players like some of the ones we've mentioned at this point, Benz, Nielsen, Bernstein, Marvin McNutt, Adam Geddes, Marcus Zusevic. They're all going to be Mike Daniels. They're going to have their senior days. They're going to have that moment. When you reflect back on your chance, your senior day, and you had the opportunity, you hear your name called, and you get a chance to meet your family at the side. Just what really is going through your mind as something like that is taking place, and just knowing, okay, this is it. This is your last game at Kinnick Stadium.
The first thing that went through my mind was like, gosh, this is it. Like you said, there's no coming back. I got 60 minutes to sit here and leave everything I got on the line, and just to sit here and be here the last four and a half years or whatnot, it's a great opportunity to be in front of this crowd, these guys that have been behind me. It's one of those deals where you don't have any words. It's just one of those deals where the emotions just hit you right there, right before your name get announced or one of the other teammates. Like, this is real life. I'm done. I used to sit here and think, oh, man, this career is never going to end. It's a continued grind. It's not just a season. It's the off season. It's the summertime. But it's one of those deals. Emotions, you're going to see a lot of guys with a lot of emotion flowing, especially the most emotional guys. But it's a great feeling. And it's just one of those deals. You're just proud to be a Hawkeye.
You mentioned the emotion, and I know the players obviously are going to say, they're looking forward to it, but they also want to, keep things in perspective and be able to focus on the game. But just how much more difficult does that actually become when you are someone in that position, knowing that, okay, yeah, you have a game on Saturday, but, oh, this is the last game that you're going to play in the stadium in front of that crowd?
I think the biggest thing is, like anyone says, and Coach probably said it to the younger underclassmen Sunday or after the game Saturday, is like, hey, this is senior's last game. Give them everything you got. It's one of the emotional deals where, like, in practice, you're going to do whatever it is to get this guy prepared to ball out on Saturday, and you give everything you got, because the seniors only have one senior day, and it's one of those deals you'll remember the rest of your life. I went out with a blast, but it's just one of those deals. It's kind of hard to leave your last footstep in Kinnick Stadium with a loss. You will always remember your last game, and I always do for some reason. Is you always remember your last memory.
Now, as far as the actual opponent, Michigan State's coming in. They're ranked 13th, just like Michigan was last week. And at the moment, they sit atop the Legends Division with a 4-1 Big Ten mark. However, it's one of those situations where both teams, the winner of this game on Saturday is going to, the path is clear. So when you know that those stakes are at play, just how much more importance suddenly gets placed on doing those things, like in practice, doing the little things, and, you talk about making sure guys are prepared to play. How much more does that kind of go through your mind as you get ready for a game of this magnitude?
I would think a lot of things that Coach probably really going to focus on this week is special teams, because Michigan State has got it done in special teams a lot this year, and it's a lot of things that goes on with senior day, because there's a lot of emotions and stuff with that going on. It's like, okay, it's a senior year, senior days, the fans there, they're going to cheer, they're going to be there throughout the whole day, and it's like you said, you just lose focus with some things. You just forget about some things, regardless if it's going to class and just trying to put the best game plan or whatever it is. But this game is very key. And like you say, you got to take it day by day with the last three games of the season. And it's not just, you know, we can't look at Purdue and Nebraska. It's like you say, you just got to get this game over with and go to the next one. But this game is very pivotal. And like the guys probably 2-3 weeks ago, they'd be like, we don't have any chance, you know, and like anyone else would say is you appreciate anyone that's behind you. And so like the support that you get just from players, fans, and whoever else there is one of those deals you're just happy about. And the focus should be there, like I said.
How much, and I know obviously last year Iowa beat Michigan State rather handily, but the three games that you had a chance to play in against the Spartans, all three of them really went down to the wire, and it's one of those games, especially now with these two teams in the same division, it almost has the feel of a rivalry, kind of. Maybe not the same magnitude as like an Iowa State or Nebraska or Minnesota, but it's starting to just kind of get to that point from a competitive aspect. Do you see that as well, and just what kind of stands out when you think back on preparing for teams like Michigan State that are coached by somebody like Mark D'Antonio?
I was going to say one thing that Michigan State, when I think about Michigan State and I think about their mascot or whatnot, a Spartan, you know, a Spartan is a tough guy. And that's one thing that Coach Ferentz said that D'Antonio said that he wanted to do when he got to Michigan State is be able to put a very tough and physical team out there, and they're going to take over being the bullies of the Big Ten instead of us, Iowa, who's been a bully of the Big Ten in the last couple of years, probably decade now. And that's what we pride ourselves in, and that's what D'Antonio prides himself in. It's tough defense and being very physical. It's one of those deals, like you say. I seen someone say something about Michigan State-Iowa game. It's just like a Ravens and Steelers game. It's a very physical game, and you're going to go blow for blow. And that's honest. I think that's kind of the honest truth when you're sitting there talking about two physical teams just getting at it, getting after it for 60 minutes. And that's what like a lot of people like to see. And I was getting ready to say, this game, like you say, is a very physical game. And I wouldn't be surprised if the game goes to the last minute either. There's a couple injuries here and there, you know. Hopefully everyone is healthy at the end of the game. But it's just one of those deals like, it's going to be some old-school football here played Saturday at Kinnick Stadium.
And then I guess my last question for you here before we move on. Iowa's in a position where if it does win on Saturday, it will have gone undefeated at Kinnick Stadium for the first time since 2004, which I would imagine that's got to be one of those stats that catches you off guard, because that means all 5 years you were there, you didn't make it through an entire season undefeated at home. Just knowing that magnitude's there as well, how much of a role do you think that might play, just knowing that those guys are going to want to defend their home turf and get to that point where they could sit there and say, hey, they made it through a season undefeated?
Well, it's not just that. You know, coaches is also talking about that, especially Coach Doyle. It's just one of those deals where you can sit here, you can brag to a guy like Chris Rowell or, you know, a guy like Brian Bulaga, Rick Stanzi, that, hey, we went undefeated our senior year or just this year in general. It's remarkable. Kinnick Stadium is a hard stadium to actually win out of, and most of the games that we lost in Kinnick when I was playing was very close games. I was outside of the Ohio State game in 2006. But it was just one of those deals where you take a lot of pride into where you live and your home or whatnot, but that's a remarkable stat. The stat, because in 2004 they also won a Big Ten championship. Mm-hmm. So, will history repeats itself? We never know.
Well, with that in mind, Chris, if you're ready for the pick'em here, we'll get to that. We'll start this pick'em, this week's pick'em, with a game down the SEC between South Carolina and Florida. The Gamecocks are at home. They're ranked 15th in the country. Coming off a loss to Arkansas last week, they can still win the SEC East. As a matter of fact, they can clinch that division on Saturday if they win and Georgia loses to Auburn. Florida just ended a four-game losing streak last weekend at home against Vanderbilt. How do you see this game playing out?
Well, you know what? I think this is a very intriguing game this week. I wouldn't say that a Florida victory would be a very big upset. I think if if South Carolina still has Steven Garcia, I know he's been gone here for a couple of weeks now. I'm sure. I know that. It's just one of those deals. If South Carolina still had Steven Garcia on the team, it'd be completely different with the actual him being a vet on a team, sitting, be able to get a couple plays in with Connor Shaw or whatnot. But I was looking at something that Craig James was saying, that he don't really trust Connor Shaw at all, and I was saying the same thing. Like, Connor Shaw has all the experience that he has, and that's it. He don't have anyone that has game experience really to back him up, so pretty much everything that he does is coming from him or either the coaches, and the coaches can do with so much. Coaches can go out there and play for him, so, but it's one of those deals. He's coming off an injury also.
Yeah, and they're not even sure if he's going to play or not.
And that's going to be a tough one, so I'm really going with the upset this week, just because I think South Carolina is just all messed up and banged up, you know, starting with Steven Garcia and then Marcus Lattimore. But they have a phenomenal defense. They're back at home. I wouldn't be shocked if they actually win this game. But I'm going with the upset this week. And I feel that Florida got everything going, especially with a big victory. It was a big victory, no matter what who it was against, you know, at the time. So it's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. You know, you get – it's time to play a bigger game. And it's South Carolina to sit here and be like, okay, Florida beat a good team this week. John Brantley is back, and I really think that's the reason why they win this game.
I actually am going to agree with you here on Florida pulling this off. I was really kind of torn on this game just because, obviously, Connor Shaw possibly not being able to go really hurt South Carolina, because then you wonder, okay, who is their quarterback? Marcus Lattimore being out for the year doesn't help things. They do have Alshon Jeffrey. They have a really good defensive line and pretty decent defense, but And while I do think the games Florida lost, it's because the teams that they lost to were much better in the trenches. And it's not saying that South Carolina isn't, but I think that this is a game, and you saw how Arkansas was able to move the ball in South Carolina's defense. I could see Florida being able to do the same thing with some of the playmakers that they have, guys like Chris Rainey and Jeff Demps. And you mentioned Brantley, you know, being more back into the game now and after the injury that he dealt with. I do think this is a game that, it's either one of those games. It's South Carolina. If they do win, it'll be a very low scoring game. But if Florida could put up points, I think South Carolina's going to have a hard time keeping up. And that's why I think the Gators are going to end up prevailing, like you. Moving on now to the game that I did end up adding to the pick'em this week to replace the Penn State-Nebraska game. Oklahoma State coming off a very big win over Kansas State at home last Saturday. They're now going down to Lubbock to take on Texas Tech, who's now lost two straight games. They've just been crushed. Cowboys are now number two in the country after their win last week. I think Texas Tech can make this a very interesting game since they are at home. But and you do have to keep in mind that they were able to beat Oklahoma. But, again, I think it's one of those things that Oklahoma State knows that, okay, this is not going to be an easy game. And they I think, are going to have the right focus in place. So maybe Texas Tech's able to hang around with them for a while. But at the end of the day, I don't see Oklahoma State losing this game.
I agree with you also. Oklahoma State came off in a very impressive game where I was watching pretty much once the second quarter hit, and it got very interesting. At first, I was like, oh, Kansas State is not going to be able to hang with these guys. And then, you know, as the game developed, I think it was the third quarter where 22 points were scored. And you were like, holy crap, in 2 minutes, 22 points. Yeah. So I was like, this game is much more interesting than Alabama and LSU. But, you know, Alabama-LSU game was very intriguing or whatnot, and we can talk about that for days. But Oklahoma State played very impressive, especially with them having the turnovers that they had. And Kansas State quarterback played his butt off last week, and it just fell short here with the last couple plays or whatnot, similar to the Iowa-Michigan game. But Texas Tech has the offense to go pound for pound with Oklahoma State, but the defense, no. So, like I said, I agree with you in Oklahoma State victory on the road.
Now moving on to – and we rarely talk about the Mountain West Conference, but we are going to here because – it is a rematch of the 2009-2010 Fiesta Bowl. TCU is 7-2 now. They're just outside the top 25. They're going up to Boise, take on Boise State Broncos, who ranked fifth in the country and obviously undefeated. This is just one of those games. This is the only time they're going to meet in a conference game because TCU will be in the Big 12 next year. it's always intriguing when these two teams play each other, but at the end of the day, I just think Boise State, it's one of those things that they're on a mission, especially knowing that they do have a realistic chance. At least I think they do. Maybe not of ending up in the national championship game, but they have a chance here the last few weeks where if they do run the table, they could potentially be able to make a legit case for being in that game. And I think with that in mind and just knowing how it didn't work out for them last year, I think that's something that they're going to keep as a focus. And they obviously know the type of opponent TCU is. And just all that combined with the fact that this game's on the blue turf, I just have a hard time seeing Boise State losing this game at home, so I'm going to go with the Broncos.
I was going to say one thing that Boise State just, they can't find it. The actual competition, you know, yes, you get Georgia and you get Toledo team, but Toledo's not going to get the job done. And I forgot who else Boise State played in non-conference. But Boise State, I honestly feel that they should be number three team in the country. Yes, I don't think Alabama should be number three. There's no way. But Boise State, they're at home. It's the blue turf, but I don't think they'll get it done. I think, like you said, I know you just raised your eyebrows there, but TCU is one of those teams. They were the first to say, hey, look at us. We're going to get the job done. And Boise State been sitting there on the West Coast or whatnot. TCU, like, hey, yes, we lost two games. It was some two tough games, actually, that they lost. But I feel that TCU can go on a road here and be able to make some noise and crash this BCS system once again for another week straight. So I really think that they'll be able to get the job done. Gary Patterson is a pretty good coach when it comes to big games. So this is a huge game, and that's when he shows up. And I know that we sit here and say that, hey, Baylor game. Baylor had a really good team in the beginning of the season. And
still have a decent team.
But it's just one of those deals where TCU, now that they didn't got smacked around a couple times and, you know, had a lot of success and on a nice little run streak. So I think they're going to have a lot of turmoil and a lot of steam going into this game. And Gary Patterson had put something together and shocked the world.
The one thing I will say is regarding Boise State and just the whole BCS picture in general, this is really looking far down the line. But if Georgia does win the SEC East and were to somehow upset LSU in the SEC title game, Boise State would have a very compelling argument to play for the national championship because they played Georgia in that same stadium, the Georgia Dome, and beat them. So, but that's something to look at down the road. This week they're playing TCU at home. I'm going with Broncos. He's going with Horned Frogs. Moving on now to a game featuring two teams that aren't ranked, but it's still a pretty big rivalry in the world of college football. Miami going up to Doak Campbell Stadium to take on Florida State. It doesn't look like either team is going to be playing in the ACC championship game this year, but Florida State does have 6 wins. Miami can become bowl eligible with a victory, which would be kind of remarkable considering the new coaching change and everything that they were dealing with there at the beginning of the season. It's one of those games to me that I'm leaning towards Florida State, not just because they're at home, but I just think back to last year's game when they played them in Miami. They absolutely stomped on the Hurricanes. It was not a close game at all. And I still feel like Florida State has the right personnel in place to win, to match up with Miami's talent. And I just think that this is a contest that I have a hard time picturing Florida State losing, so I'm going to go with the Seminoles.
I was going to say, this game going into the beginning of the season, you would still say Florida State actually win this game, and I'm going to also go with Florida State. The reason why I'm going to go with Florida State is just because Florida State has had a long, tough season here, you know, a national championship aspirations and all this stuff, and this is a big-time rivalry game, and I really feel that this is going to go back to one of the old-school Florida State-Miami games, and it's a lot of pride. You know, and whoever won this game is probably going to win some recruits against each other or whatnot. And like I said, going into the beginning of the season, you would say Florida State to roll over Miami. But then both teams had some crazy seasons, you know, losses, injuries. But I think EJ Manuel has really put it back together now that he's got back from this injury he had suffered in the Oklahoma game. And they should be able to roll back home in Florida State with a lot of pride for not just only both teams, but for the whole state.
Moving on now to a rivalry nickname, clean old-fashioned hate. Auburn is ranked 24th in the country. They're going between the hedges to take on Georgia, who's ranked 14th. Georgia controls its destiny in the SEC East, can actually win the division Saturday if they win and South Carolina loses at home to Florida. I don't see Georgia losing this game. They're at home. They obviously know what's at stake. They've really turned their season around after starting 0-2. Aaron Murray, obviously, he's been a really good quarterback this season. And I haven't been able to check, but I know they had the suspended running backs last week. I would imagine that they're coming back this week for this game. And, you know, Auburn, they proved me wrong. I didn't think they'd be that good this year. They're somewhat better than I thought they would be. But at the end of the day, I have a hard time seeing Georgia losing this game, especially with it being at home. I'm going with the Bulldogs.
Clean old-fashioned hate.
Yep. That is the actual nickname of that rivalry.
Wow. I was getting ready to say, this, like you say, this game is very, very appealing. Auburn has some pretty good games left on their schedule, and I can really see a upset coming, which I don't really see is any upsets really in the SEC unless it's like an Ole Miss versus Alabama or something like that. But this game, I have to go with Georgia just because they're at home. They got a lot of things going forth. But like you say, we can't not pay attention to Auburn and what they have done this season. You know, they goes up and down. They can go out there and play with the big boys. And, you know, they're a heavyweight contender. And let's not forget, they are the national champions until someone wins it this year. Well, next year. But it's just one of those deals where Georgia, like you say, it's too much Georgia, and especially those running backs should be back. And I don't see Coach Mark Richt having those guys out in another big game at home. And they're going to try to keep rolling and be able to win this this SEC East.
And I should actually clarify, it just dawned on me that that is not actually the nickname of it. I got Georgia's rivalry with Georgia Tech confused with its one with Auburn. This is actually the Deep South's oldest rivalry. So anyone down south that's listening, I apologize for that error. Moving along, and this time they're a Big Ten game that we will discuss. Michigan, obviously coming off the loss to Iowa last week, they're now going to Champaign to take on an Illinois team that's lost three straight but coming off a bye. Last year, these teams played a phenomenal game up in Ann Arbor. Michigan won 67-65. This time around, Illinois is a defense that I think could keep Michigan in check, especially after what we saw last week at Kinnick Stadium. But I also have a hard time seeing Michigan losing two straight like this. And with that being said, I do think the Wolverines go into Memorial Stadium and get out of there with a win. And I think Illinois can make it a good game, and I don't see it being quite as high scoring, obviously. But I just think that Michigan's just a better team, and I think Brady Hoke's really going to have that team's attention now after what happened last weekend, so I'm going with the Wolverines.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say one thing about Illinois. They have a phenomenal defense, but also, they, you know, like we both know, they have a really good quarterback and receiver. Things haven't been going well for Illinois, you know, here the last couple of weeks or whatnot, with them dropping out of the top 25, but then, you know, it's reality. The Big Ten, and you're going to sit here and you're going to go pound for pound with some of the better teams in the country. And like you say, I don't see Michigan losing two games in a row. And they're on a roll, but it's one of those deals where I really think that Brady Hoke is going to go back to some old school Michigan and get the run game going, and then next thing you know, it's going to be a shootout. I really feel that this might end up being a shootout, but Michigan's defense is way better than it was last year.
Should also be worth noting, too, that an Illinois victory on Saturday would be beneficial to Iowa, or really to whoever wins that Iowa's game against Michigan State. But moving on, Kansas State, they didn't fall in the polls at all after losing last week. They're still 17th in the country, but now they're at home after losing their second game in a row. They're at home against the Texas A&M team that's now 5-4 after losing to Oklahoma last week. Really not having the season that some people were thinking that they would down there in College Station. With this game being at Kansas State, I think that puts the Wildcats in an advantage, but I'm actually going to go with A&M here because I think it's to the point where they are a desperate team. And I know that they lost Michael to an injury. He's done. But A&M still has the talent in place. And Kansas State, I'm very curious to see how this team's going to be able to respond now after losing to two really good football teams. Just to know that, okay, they're at home. They have a chance to, you know, make up for it and put themselves in a position where they can still go to a really good bowl game?
Right.
Or is it going to be a situation where they end up their season just kind of spiraling out of control, kind of like what we're seeing right now at Illinois? And I'm almost leaning towards the latter. And I realize Bill Snyder's a good head coach and everything, but it's just one of those situations where I feel the desperate team's going to be pulling all the stops. And I think in this case, it is A&M. And just knowing that really, if they don't win this game, they're looking at possibly ending the year 6-6. Right. And I know that that would be a colossal disappointment for them, especially going into the SEC next year. So I do think A&M is going to go out there with something to prove. And assuming they'll blow a second half lead, I think they get it done up in Manhattan on Saturday.
I think with Texas A&M right now, they're like, hey, this might be a lost season. And, you know, with things that's not going right, what's going on, trying to figure out how can they get a win, whatever it is, get some kind of steam going here. I really feel that Kansas State, they lost two tough teams, you know, back-to-back, you know, top three teams or whatnot. I really felt that Oklahoma State, they played their butts off there. And Kansas State, they also did, too. Yeah, I think, like you said, with them not falling very high down the ladders or whatnot in the top 25, I really feel that it was more of a moral victory, and I really feel that they can take this and end off their season on a very high note. But I'm going with Kansas State. They're back home, and they lost two really good teams, and I think that they figure if they win this game, they still have a shot at a BCS game. Maybe, maybe not. You just never know. But if you got guys in that locker room saying, hey, man, we just lost two really good teams, Why can't we go out here and beat a team that we're supposed to beat on paper?
Now, moving along to the Pac-12 here for these last two games before we get to Iowa, Michigan State. USC coming off a win at Colorado last Friday after losing at heartbreaker to Stanford. They're at home, ranked 18th in the country, playing at home against a Washington team that played Oregon tough last week, but just didn't have enough to really keep up with them. I believe the final score of that game was 34-17. There's a history here, though, these teams, because Washington, I believe, has won the last two meetings. And since Sarkisian's become their head coach, and he obviously has ties to USC, he and Lane Kiffin were both assistants to Pete Carroll. And I think that this is a game, obviously, that Washington is going to get up for, because Sarkisian's going to make them get up for it. Mm-hmm. But I think this time around, I like USC, not just because they're at home, but just the talent. Again, and going back to that, Matt Barkley's really come on strong and had a solid season, and Robert Woods has quietly emerged as probably one of the best wide receivers in college football, if not the best. And I know USC's had some issues on defense, but they've looked better in that regard. And I just think it's almost to me one of those games where whoever gets the stop first on defense is going to end up winning, and I just see that being USC. That's why I like the Trojans at home.
I was going to say USC is one of those teams, you know, like we both know, USC is very talented, but they don't really have much to play for, you know, outside of pride. And next year, praying and hoping, just like a lot of people saying, that the biggest recruits that USC has is their offensive lineman and also Matt Barkley, which more than likely it's going to be kind of hard to bring back those guys. But I really still see that USC is going to be a very dangerous team next year. But we're talking about right now, I still feel that USC is a better team than Washington, even though they are a very dangerous team with their quarterback. Mm-hmm. And last week I said something about Nick Montana just coming off the sideline. Right. He came off the bench and threw a bomb that gave Washington some hope or whatnot. I think they end up scoring a field goal after that play or whatnot. But Washington has some really talented players also, you know, especially with that running back, Chris Polk. I like Chris Polk, but USC, too much talent and too much for Washington at home.
And now the very, very big game Saturday night going on in Palo Alto, California. Stanford is now number 3 in the country, undefeated. They are playing host to Oregon, who is won 8 in a row since losing the opener to LSU. They're 8-1, ranked 6th in the country. They're in the same division. If Stanford wins, they do clinch the Pac-12 North. They would be playing in the Pac-12 title game. Oregon wins, it's not official, but Oregon would have control of its destiny. Stanford would need them to lose games late in the season. But These two teams, they played a very entertaining game last year. Stanford got out to a big lead, and Oregon managed to come back and actually win that game pretty decisively. But that was in Eugene. This year they're playing at Stanford. The script's kind of flipped. Oregon's kind of been that team that's just been quiet ever since they lost to LSU, where Stanford, all the pressure's on them and on Andrew Luck, who right now is probably the runaway winner for the Heisman at this moment. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see here in the next few weeks. But I actually think that this is a game. I've been back and forth on this because Oregon got LaMichael James back last week, and he's proven that he could play even with that elbow injury. And I know Stanford has some injuries, but at the end of the day, I just think that this is a game that's really – this is kind of Andrew Luck's moment to really seize the Heisman Trophy. And really, this is Stanford's moment to not just seize the Pac-12, but make a very valid case to the rest of the country. Hey, you know what? We're right now – we deserve to play in the national championship game against LSU, assuming LSU wins out. And I just think that they know what's at stake, and I just have a hard time seeing that slip away from them. I think it's going to be a great game. I think Oregon, it's going to be a shootout. It's going to be a very entertaining game to watch throughout the course of the evening. But at the end of the day, I just don't see Stanford blowing this.
I was going to say, this game is very intriguing. I can compare it to the national championship game last year. Oregon made the national championship for quite a reason, you know. I think you're going against speed against a hard-nosed Stanford team. Oregon is a very good team, as you know. They got a phenomenal backup at quarterback if they actually need one, and a phenomenal backup at running back. I really feel that Oregon needs to really take control of this game and keep Andrew Luck on the sideline, of course. I really feel that Andrew Luck, like you said, he needs to seize this moment no matter what it is and take care of business. And if he take care of business, yes, he get the Heisman Trophy and the Stanford, you know, the national championship picture is very, very good for them. But, I mean, Oregon, like I said, was in the national championship for a reason. And they feel that they can go back and win it again this year. I really feel the same way. Like you say, you just got to keep the guys healthy on Oregon's team or whatnot. And I really feel that Oregon to win this when on the road, it's their chance, just like it's Stanford's chance, to sit there and say, hey, we lost to the best team in the country, you know, on a neutral field. But we're going to Stanford, who's the number ranked three team in the country. We can beat those guys, and we're going to show that we're for real and not just as a fluke because of the first game of the season. But it's one of those deals where Oregon has a chance, too, to sit here and, like, hey, we deserve to be in here with a little help, you know, up there in the rankings or whatnot. So I really feel that Oregon actually can pull this one away.
And I should also mention, too, that at the beginning of the season, I looked at this game and I thought, okay, Oregon will probably win. They were my pick to win the Pac-12, but just from what I've seen lately from Stanford, it's hard to go against them at this point. And now, finally, Iowa is at home against Michigan State, who, as I mentioned before, is ranked 13th in the country. It's an 11 a.m. kickoff from Kinnick Stadium on Saturday. It's the game's on ESPN2. It is Iowa Senior Day. It's the home finale. And as I also mentioned earlier here, the winner of this game is going to have the inside track to representing the Legends Division in the Big Ten Championship. In other words, whoever wins this game, if they win out, it's their division. Chris, just how? What are the things that you're going to be looking for here on Saturday, and how do you see it unfolding?
I was going to say, I can say this for both teams. It's first is stop the run. Either you stop in Baker and company or you stop in Coker. Number two is special teams. Special teams is going to play a huge role in this game, and I think that whoever plays well in special teams and who has possession of the ball the most, the team will win. And also three, defense. Playing outstanding defense when it comes to the red zone. Iowa has to punch the ball in and stop Michigan from running the ball or whatnot.
Michigan State from running the ball also.
I feel that Michigan State has better playmakers when it comes to the red zone, you know, with the receivers, you know, they're way more experienced receivers or whatnot, and their quarterback is a phenomenal quarterback when it comes to big games. Last year, not so much, but I really feel that Iowa should be able to get the job done. They're at home. It's a senior game. It's the last game ever for, you know, guys like Marcus Zugrovich, Adam Geddes, Marvin McNutt, Jordan Bernstein, Broderick Benz, Mike Daniels, LeBron Daniel, and so on, you know, and I don't know who I forgot, but it's just one of those deals where the crowd's going to be there, the underclassmen is going to be there. Now it's just time to bring a big win home and continue with this Big Ten Leaders Division, I mean Legends Division's championship, and I mean take their side of the championship and be able to go in Indianapolis and represent.
At the beginning of the season, I kind of viewed this game as one that I didn't think Iowa would win, to be completely honest. I figured Michigan State would have a chance to come in here with a chip on its shoulder after what happened last year and try to right that wrong. They're still going to have that chip on their shoulder and try to right that wrong. However, my tune has changed, and I'm not just basing this off what I saw last week either. I do think Iowa is going to win this game on Saturday. It's simply this. I guess the intangibles are all in Iowa's favor with this game, and really at this point in the series, because Michigan State has not won at Kinnick Stadium since 1989. I mean, just to put that in perspective, you and I were both like 2 years old the last time Michigan State went to Kinnick Stadium and won. Also, the fact that, yeah, Iowa won that game last year convincingly, but it's just even in the close games, they found a way to win. Obviously, I know that Michigan State won the game in East Lansing back in 08 and when Sean Green got stopped, but that was a situation where, you know, Iowa was going for the win that day, and had that run gotten a first down and had you guys scored a touchdown, you would have won that game. And it probably would have been a completely different scenario for the way that season unfolded. I also think, too, you mentioned the seniors. I think they're going to have a chip on their shoulder as well to kind of counteract Michigan State. Just knowing what is at stake. And I'll say that Iowa wins this game 23-20. And I'm going to throw a little caveat in here. It won't be quite like the final play of the 2009 game, but I think Marvin McNutt will get a touchdown in the final minute that wins it. I don't think it'll be the final play. I don't think it'll be on a slant, but maybe it's just on the fade that James Vandenberg has hit McNutt on all season long. But I think it's going to be one of those situations where Iowa puts together a game-winning drive late and is able to secure the victory. And I think McNutt is going to leave that one final impression on everybody as he leaves the field for the last time. And I think Iowa will prevail.
I was going to say I forgot one senior. It's kind of weird for me to actually forget the senior, Sean Prater. I really feel that this game is going to come down to the defense on the field last. And like any fan in Iowa, they would say, hey, I would love to see the defense to be the last people to actually be out there on the field. Because when you sit there and hear the roar after a big defensive stand, it's like no other. It's like no other, man. So I'm really putting on the defense to stop Michigan State at the end of the game.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. I'd like to thank Jordan Gerritsen from the Daily Iowa for coming on this week as a guest. Chris, thank you as always. If you are interested in becoming a subscriber to HawkeyeDrive.com, we offer a 3-day free trial, and then our monthly and yearly rates are $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring. It gives you access to all the content on the site, both free and obviously the premium stuff. Chris, thank you again. And for Jordan and Chris, I'm Brendan signing off.